Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming today. There's some empty seats up here as well, and I know there's a handful still at the door just coming in. So please don't be shy, and we do want to fill up some seats. We don't want, you know, the church pews empty at the front and everybody sitting at the back here. So please do move up to these chairs as well. So thank you very much. My name is Dave Quist. I'm the Executive Director of the Institute of Marriage and Family. And I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Today we're releasing a report entitled Private Choices, Public Costs, How Failing Families Cost Us All. I'm going to just tell you briefly about what the Institute of Marriage and Family is. We were founded in the year 2005, and since that time have been working with social policy across Canada, gathering and creating new information, working with academics and researchers literally around the world, and bringing that to bear with members of parliament, community leaders, devotional or denominational leaders, what we call decision makers, those people that make a difference in our society all around us as well. Today we're in releasing the report. We're going to be going through the report in brief. There'll be about a half-hour presentation followed by a question and answer time. I know the people are on busy schedules, and so I thank you for joining us here today. The report is now live on our website in the package that you got at the door or should have picked up. If you didn't, there should be more by the door. You'll find a bookmark, and there are two websites listed on that bookmark. One is our main IMFC website, www.imfcanada.org, and the website or the report is front and center on that that website now as well. On the back of the bookmark, on the black and white side, you'll find a searchable database on social science research. There are just short of 4,000 articles on that website now. So if you're interested in doing things around children or parenting or very many different aspects of that, we would encourage you to go to that website. It's free of charge. There's no login. Please just go ahead and use it. We continually add new pieces of research to that information as well. For those that are not speaking, I'm just going to introduce our staff very, very quickly here. Peter John Mitchell over here on the side. Just wave, Peter John. Derek Miedema is over here, and Stefan Pazlak at the very back there. I'd like to thank them for their help and encouragement for getting today organized as well. And I'll be introducing a couple other people in just a moment as well. I'd like to thank Mr. Rod Bernouge, Member of Parliament for Winnipeg South, for sponsoring today's event, and would like to ask if he would come forward just to bring a few opening comments this morning as well. Thanks, Rod.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, David. Of course, it's a pleasure to be able to help sponsor this event today. I know your organization has done some great work over the years and continues to. I would like to acknowledge a few MPs that are here. I see Chris Workington, Gary Breichreitz, Stephen Woodworth as well. Joyce Murray is also here. I don't know if there's any other members of Parliament in the room, but of course, it's appreciated that you came out today to this important event. I've really been a fan of this organization, but especially the two writers today, two very significant women on the policy front in Canada, truly visionaries. Both Andrea and Rebecca are two individuals that I'm big fans of, have read their work over the years, and when I heard they were putting together this report, I got pretty excited about it, and I knew that it would be something great to be involved with. So as someone that sees a lot of family breakdown in the Aboriginal community, especially in Western Canada where I'm from, I know the consequences of this important issue. And so today I think we're going to really hear some great information which will bring this issue forward and give some good advice. And so I guess on that note, I'll hand it back to Dave. Thank you very much for coming.
Thanks very much.
I neglected to mention that this event is translated as well, and so if you would prefer to listen to it en français, your hearing devices along the chairs and so on are working and active at this particular time. It's my pleasure to introduce our two co-writers and presenters right now. This is the start of a conversation, a discussion on the value of marriage in Canada today and the advantages and disadvantages of where the erosion of marriage actually takes place. I have the pleasure of working with Andrea Mrozek, who is our Manager of Research and Communications at the IMFC. She has a master's degree in history from the University of Toronto. She has been a driving force within our office and has had a great number of articles published both with us and in previous experiences as well, with varied from the Western Standard, the National Post, Calgary Herald, Montreal Gazette, Ottawa Citizen, and the Toronto Sun as well. Our second speaker is Rebecca Wahlberg. She is the president and founder of the Wakefield Center for Policy Research. She hails from Winnipeg. She also has a master's degree in history from the University of Manitoba. And her research has largely included healthcare and social policy. And we're very pleased that she joined us on this particular venture and is here able to present today as well. So without you being forced to listen to me any longer, I'll turn it over to Andrea. Thank you very much, Andrea.
Thanks, Dave. I'm not sure whether being a driving force in the office is a good thing. It makes me sound like a hurricane, but thank you for that, and thank you to everyone who came today. We'll try and keep our presentation relatively short, because if you're interested, there'll be lots of questions, and if you're not, why draw it out? I'm going to start today with background information, why we decided to do this report, what the situation is for Canadian families today, and how we compare on this subject globally. Then my co-author, Rebecca, will take it away with a discussion of how we reached our numbers, what we included, what we didn't, and why, along with our recommendations. So that's the order of affairs, and I'll get started then. So imagine with me for a second that you are starting out on your life. There's a fair number of young people here today, so it shouldn't actually require that much imagination. But imagine that you're starting out on your life, and maybe you've finished high school or university. You might be looking to settle down. What kinds of decisions are you going to make about your family? And how will you choose to start your life with your boyfriend or your girlfriend? Are you going to get married? Are you going to live together, then get married? Some today consider starting a family entirely on their own. And none of these things are off limits today. But the array of choices we face in our personal lives, in my experience anyway, comes without any information or education on what the reasonable outcomes or repercussions of those choices might be. So today's presentation is about the long term. It's about the long-term future for families. It is about how good economics partner with good social policy, and that one cannot be strong without the other. It's about educating on the benefits of marriage, particularly where it pertains to protecting children from poverty. It is not about heavy-handed government intervention coercing people into marriage. Our new research today for Canada is about informing on the aggregate, on the statistics, the solid body of social science evidence suggesting that kids fare best in a home with their own married parents. Today's research also reflects the statistical reality shown in various polls that young people today do want marriage and family, and they do prioritize it, and they would like it as a key goal in their own lives. And so this new research today is also about helping young people take meaningful steps toward achieving that. It is not about pointing fingers or blaming anyone. Blaming those who find themselves in a different kind of family situation through no fault of their own. And so I would like to say right away that we certainly acknowledge that no family ever asked for breakdown and that this was not a desired outcome. What we are aiming for through education is a culture where marriages are made more strong, such that no husband or wife would consider walking out, and certainly not at the first sign of trouble. We also have to ask ourselves the question, I think, of why information on the benefits of marriage, which are so obvious in the social science literature, are made almost completely unattainable to regular folks and just the people in this room here today. From my perspective at the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada, this information may be obvious, but I feel oftentimes like I'm in the minority amongst my friends. So the report you have in your hands today, hot off the presses, is a study that estimates the amount of funding directed at poverty alleviation due to family breakdown. And we then went one step further and quantified how much money would be saved were family breakdown to decrease. So I'll reveal the numbers, drum roll please. The numbers that are in your report right at the front, we are spending, speaking very conservatively, about $7 billion annually on family breakdown. And we would save, again, very conservatively speaking, close to $2 billion were family breakdown to decrease in a realistic fashion. And I'm going to let Rebecca get into the details on the numbers and why $2 billion is not half of $7 billion and all the rest of that later in the presentation. I might just pause actually right now to say that we're going to be explaining why the numbers are so conservative, but it's possibly only in Ottawa that we need to explain why $7 billion is a low amount. I don't want to diminish our own work, and it was a lot of work, but I'm prepared to say that this report and this presentation are not about the numbers. We're just using those numbers to get at the notion that families do matter. Seems to be a sort of increasingly quaint or archaic notion today. So we want to be emphasizing that. We're saying that family is important, that marriage is an important protector against poverty, and when we don't value either, we pay quite literally billions of dollars. Mainstream Canadian opinion, myself included, not too long ago, would have thought that family matters are entirely private and have no bearing whatsoever on the strength of our economy, our culture, or our communities. So with this report, we hope to highlight that we should all care whether families are strong, because they are the bulwark behind strong communities, our culture, and the economy. Explain that not all family forms equip their members equally for success when it comes to social outcomes and their need for public support. And finally, we hope to inform public policymakers of the benefits of marriage and the associated costs of marital and family breakdown. So what is family breakdown? That's a reasonable question. We have defined it in the report, and we say that it represents what happens when we give up on the ideal of a man and a woman marrying, raising children together, and staying together to watch even their grandchildren grow. So family breakdown is not just one act, such as divorce or the breakup of a cohabiting couple who have children and have been together for a long time. It also includes a growing category of single parents who have never married or never lived with the father or mother of their children. So as such, we see family breakdown as involving the creation of families broken from the start. In our paper, we also refer to strong families and marriages as an invisible shield. Our families encourage us and help us to thrive. We consider that welfare is a measure of last resort, and it is not a success story. It's the government attempting to compensate for a failure, the lack of any private community or family support. And as we'll see with some figures I have, where the government has to compensate in varying degrees depending on your family structure. So the first figure I have here is shows the higher proportion of families living below the low-income cutoff. Whatever you think of the low-income cutoff as an appropriate measure, it is consistent across the country, and so it shows, it helps us to see the big difference between two-parent families, who are the lower bar, less two-parent families below LICO, the higher mauve bar, single-parent families below LICO, and this is information from the 2006 census. The next graph shows, again, something similar. It shows the higher percentages of single-parent households with children on welfare. So it's done provincially here, and you see some provincial variation, but mostly what we're getting at is the difference, again, between the percent of two-parent households with children on welfare, which is the lower bar, and the percent of lone parent households on welfare, which is the higher bar. Now, it's really important to know that we're looking at households with children in them in every case. We are well aware that the welfare rolls are filled with single men, and in sheer numbers, those outweigh the number of single parents. And even two-parent families, high numbers on welfare. But again, we're comparing family types and the proportion of single parents on welfare. And that, as you can see, is much higher. Looking at where Canada is at on family stats, social science tells us that cohabitation and lone parenthood are not as stable family forms. These are the family forms that are increasing in Canada today. So the top line is married parents, and it's decreasing. The pink line is lone parents. It's increasing, as is the common law line, also increasing. We stuck in 1931 and the information there, so we wouldn't be accused of harkening back to the 1950s, some glory days, Leave It to Beaver days. 1931, you see a fairly high percentage of lone parents, but it's for different reasons than we experience today, so we might have different outcomes and might be of less concern. So these are the family changes that are happening. I think this is mostly presented as a wholly neutral development, but as I mentioned, social science says some family forms are less stable and present some challenges for children. We can always be pleased when children thrive, and we know that they do, but in the aggregate, there are some challenges. And whether couples are married or not is a remarkably accurate predictor of outcomes for children on many different scales, even when economic factors are excluded. And some of those factors are things like the children of married parents do better on outcome measures like this. They're less likely to do drugs. They are less likely to drop out of school. They're more likely to wait longer before having sex. I think that if you're skeptical on this notion and you wonder about whether marriage helps families or not, footnote number 2 in the report is very long. And if you want to read that fine print, you can sort of see the sources on that information. So the Canadian family is definitely changing, but it's not changing uniformly across the country. In most provinces, two married parents remain the norm. The great exception is Quebec, where living together is much more common. So almost 55% of Quebec families are married. That compares with the rest of Canada. The average, excluding Quebec, is about 72%. So 55% married in Quebec and 72% married in the rest of the country, excluding Quebec. It's a big difference. Another way to put that is that just under 35% of couples live common law in Quebec, compared with a Canadian average, excluding Quebec, of about 13%. So that's another big difference. Two Canadian researchers, Finney and Sweetman are their names, and you'll hear more about them from Rebecca later. They have said that consistently a change in family status from lone parenthood to any other category decreases the probability of moving into low income. In most cases, more than halving the rate relative to those who remained single mothers. So, and we'll be talking about that a lot more later. It's a significant part of our methodology. And again, of course, significant numbers of two-parent families are also dependent on welfare, but the proportion is much lower than for single-parent families. So broken families, you see through these figures and in the report, they use public government-funded services in higher proportions. The next graph shows the same information in a similar way. Same information in different ways, sorry. You have two-parent families are the blue at the top, and this is the median family income by province and household type. So two-parent families have the higher median family income. Single dads are the yellow in the middle, and single moms are the pink at the very bottom. So basically, we're talking about the notion that chronic poverty is linked to single parenthood in Canada. This is indeed a worldwide trend. We get into some of the international statistics in the report. The same trend is evident in all OECD countries. We've isolated the United States, the United Kingdom, Australia, and Canada. That might be hard to read at the back, sorry. Just for their cultural similarities to Canada. And you can see that the child poverty rates are concentrated in the single-parent families, and that's the blue bar, and the two-parent families are the lower mauve bar. This is OECD data from the 90s, but it was a good source anyway, even if it's not as new, because it compiled all of the places, all of the countries in one source. We consider that the case of the United Kingdom might be particularly interesting because of the historical and cultural links with Canada. They've also gone further down the road of family breakdown and therefore done more research. Decades of family breakdown in the United Kingdom and poor social policy that exacerbated the problem instead of helping have led to children being raised in homes today where they've never seen a working adult and never seen a functioning marriage. In 2004 and 2005 in the UK, the largest spending portfolio was welfare at about 132.5 billion pounds, or 232 billion Canadian dollars. And that same, there's a group in the UK that does think tank work, kind of like we do, but also works with poverty eradication groups on the ground. They're called the Center for Social Justice. They released in 2006 a report on discussing pathways to poverty in the UK. And they identified that family breakdown is one of five pathways to poverty. The other ones were educational failure, economic dependency and unemployment, serious personal indebtedness, and addiction. So at no point are we saying that family breakdown is responsible for all poverty. We're well aware of other contributing factors, but you might forgive the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada for focusing on the marriage and family angle. The Centre for Social Justice in the United Kingdom highlights the manner in which persistent efforts on the part of government have failed to help those that they were meant to help. There's more people, more young people on welfare today in the United Kingdom than 10 years ago, and this in spite of government efforts, including things like a £2 billion program that was meant to decrease youth joblessness. They highlight again in the United Kingdom that poverty is becoming more entrenched at the margins, and they highlight consistently through the report that family is a vital part of the equation. That's interesting because they're not a family group. We're focusing on family and marriage because this is the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada, but they highlight in their broader research that family is a big part of the equation. So they write, committed married couple families with at least one working member lead to the best outcomes for both children and adults, reduce the likelihood of economic dependency on the state, and therefore benefit society as a whole. Now, when it comes to the percentage of kids living in lone parent households, Canada is roughly comparable with other nations. In Canada, 1 in 4 children lived in a lone parent household in 2006, and that compares with 28% in the United States and 26% in the United Kingdom. So really quickly now, I'll just highlight that this research is new in Canada, but it has been done in other countries. We have here the United Kingdom, New Zealand, and the United States. So I'll summarize those findings really briefly. I think it's just interesting that this is being noticed in other places across the globe. In the United Kingdom, a February 2009 report put the cost of family breakdown there at 37 billion pounds annually, and that's about $66 billion Canadian. And that rests on the cost of housing and emergency benefits for lone parents and a range of associated health costs, court and justice costs, and increased education costs. They also included the cost of children referred to social services because their family has broken up. In New Zealand, a 2008 report estimated the cost of family breakdown at 1 billion New Zealand dollars, and that's about 640 million Canadian. They looked at the cost of family breakdown borne by social programs, tax credits, health, justice, corrections, police, and housing. And a 2008 report from the United States estimated the cost of divorce and unwed childbearing at about $112 billion through increased costs from anti-poverty, criminal justice, and educational programs. So these numbers can't be compared even remotely because the methodologies are very different, but it's just worth having a sense of the information that's out there and the research that's being done. And each group, in spite of their high numbers, suggested that they have very much underestimated the costs of family breakdown. None have underestimated those costs as substantially as we have, and I'm going to let Rebecca explain to you why our estimates are so conservative and how we came to them.